Welcome to Our House with one of Australia's leading auctioneers, Rod Amos, and buyer's agent, Matt Sharp. And now for your dose of information and observation about real estate across the nation. Let's go live to your host, the voice of the National Rugby League, Steve Allen.
Yeah, welcome to Our House. And a couple of thank yous first up to our voiceover guy, the great Bob Peters, and also Christy and Sean Hudson-Smith and the team at Ray White Terrigal for the use of their beautiful office to record our inaugural episode. As you heard a moment ago, I've worked for the NRL for over 20 years, which includes every grand final at ANZ Stadium and also State of Origin since 1999. The NRL has been a huge career highlight for me, but a lot of people may not know that I hosted a property show for 18 years. In many ways, it was pivotal in my broadcasting career. In the early days, we smashed it in the radio ratings, and we had plenty of great guests that came on to talk about their own home, including John Laws, Steve Liebman, Kerri-Anne Kennelly, and Bryce Courtney. Two of my favourites were legendary voiceover artists Robin Moore and Keith Scott. So, it's a pleasure to launch a podcast version of the Our House Show. Every episode, Rod, Matt, and myself will take a look at suburbs around the country and also overseas and see how they're performing. And this episode, we're off to an area 30 minutes outside the Adelaide CBD. But right now, let's meet the team. We start with Matt Sharp from Sharp Property Buyers. Matt won numerous premierships with Wyong and also Terrigal, and just like his rugby league days, where he was a star halfback guiding teams around the footy field, now he does the same in property, helping clients find their own home or an investment right around Australia. Matt Sharp, welcome to Our House.
Yeah, thanks, and thanks so much for having me. It's a privilege to be here. Since a young guy, I was, you know, very, very passionate about property. Managed to and continue to build a strong diversified investment portfolio, and I invest across all of Australia. And basically, from my experience and as I was, you know, becoming more and more educated in the property space, I recognised that there was no one out there representing the buyer. To be honest, I could see a lot of people getting it wrong. Unfortunately, they were getting their advice and their information, you know, through people that had, I guess, vested interest elsewhere, whether it be through developers or some sales agents. And I just felt as though that, you know, people needed an independent voice to help them get the outcome that they desired.
You lived in New York for a while, and there's a whole lot of buyer's agents. Can you elaborate on that for us?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I lived in New York in 2016 with my brother. It wasn't through the buyer's agent stuff. It was, we were playing rugby league over there. But yeah, in America, typically I think around 85% of properties that are transacted on, buyer's agents involved. So they obviously see, whenever you're, you know, potentially doing the biggest investment of your life, that, you know, the smart move would be to invest or I guess engage a professional to help you get the best outcome, right?
How was that experience living in the Big Apple? Who were you playing for there?
We're playing for the New York Knights. Incredible experience. So grateful to have shared it with my brother. We lived in Manhattan, literally two guys from the Central Coast, from Terrigal, in our rugby league kit, on the subway going to games, right? A few times we'd just pinch ourselves. Our training facility was on Manhattan Island. It was actually Pier 40 on Hudson River, which, you know, a couple of times we're playing on a Saturday night under the, you know, the lights of Manhattan. It's just incredible, and still brings a smile to my face now when I think about it.
Did you buy property while you were there?
No, I would have loved to have.
Let's bring in the man with the Teflon voice, Rod Amos. I said at the start of the show, legendary auctioneer, a brilliant photographer. Great to see you. Welcome to Our House.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Matt.
Rod, let's get a bit of your background. When did you first start in the real estate game?
Working in real estate sales. It was 1999. I had a bit of a midlife crisis. Decided I didn't want to drive down to Sydney and interstate and spend half my time away from home in the corporate world. I actually came back from holiday in Malaysia and resigned the next day without telling my wife.
How'd that go down?
That went down about as well as you thought it might do. Farewell the credit card, the Amex, the petrol card and everything else. And then I just said, well, what else am I going to do on the Central Coast with a sales and marketing background? So it was into real estate. And it was a wonderful time to be going to real estate. Late 99, we were just looking forward to the Sydney Olympics starting the next year. That year, the Sydney Olympics, I actually started undertaking my real estate studies through Gosford TAFE, and it was a three-year TAFE course. So learned a lot back in those days with it there too. And I was lucky enough to just come under the wings of the right people too. And within 12 months, I was running half a dozen auctions a weekend, and that went forward, and I got actually walked away from actual selling, going back in 2004, concentrated on marketing and auctions. And it was only just through continued persuasion from one Sean Hudson-Smith that I came back to a selling role 3 years ago.
When you said you were in another role before coming into real estate, were you bouncing up to China on a regular basis?
Not on a regular basis. I'd actually left school and became a commercial photographer, and there, strangely enough, got into marketing, and from marketing into sales. And the last 10 years, I suppose, were like national accounts, sales, marketing roles with generally hardware companies, tool companies, Sidchrome Tools, HPM Industries. And yeah, that certainly involved a lot of interstate travel, but certainly a lot of overseas travel, sourcing products and doing trade fairs and things of that nature as well too.
Matt, you've had a love of podcasts and you've heard a lot of property podcasts. Well, what are you hoping for from Our House in 2020 and beyond?
Mate, I'm hoping for it to obviously have really good flow, hopefully be really educational, and hopefully we just keep it short and punchy like we spoke. I think it's very beneficial. Obviously, myself and Rod have, you know, we're basically coming from complete opposite sides of, I guess, the table, like literally and metaphorically speaking as well. So yeah, really looking forward to it and excited to see what the future holds.
Okay, let's get down to business. Rod, let's start in our own backyard.
Well, the beginning of COVID with, and I think that applied to not only real estate, but lifestyle in general, we were all bunkered down for the absolute worst, as we needed to be. But the forecast was with real estate, with what was supposed to transpose with jobs, with employment, with confidence, with the economy, real estate was supposed to go into immediate downturn. We had some pretty big setbacks, Matt. I mean, we had to get one group of people through an open home at a time. It was taking me 5 hours at the beginning there in order to conduct an open home at a property. But what's happened is that we haven't seen the downturn in the market. Much of that has been offset by the fact we've had mortgage relief afforded by government direction through all the financial institutions up until September. So something like 30% of the population choose to freeze their mortgages, most people being smart enough to pay down interest. But they froze the mortgage. That's taken the stress off. But the thing that surprised me above all else was just the increased demand for people wanting to look to the surety, the security, and the confidence of ownership of their own properties. The buyer inquiry literally went through the roof, and we're still seeing that trend. There's been a shortage of property starting at the beginning of the process. We're starting to see it come up to normal levels, but one thing that hasn't waned is the confidence, the desire of buyers to move into properties on the Central Coast.
Yeah, I'd wholeheartedly agree with everything that Rod's just shared there, and also I'll also touch on the lack of stock, right? There's been next to no listings coming on, huge buyer inquiry, and particularly what I'm seeing is a lot of buyers coming out of Sydney. Upwards of nearly 80% of the inquiries are coming out of Sydney, right? And I think there's a few reasons for that. On the back of obviously recent events, the pandemic, it's quite obvious that, you know, people have had an opportunity to work from home more often, and some of the bigger corporations in Sydney probably don't require their staff to be at the office 9 to 5 every single day. You can potentially work remotely now. There's a little bit more flexibility in your working hours, which means you reassess where you live, right? The Central Coast provides a fantastic lifestyle, a really affordable option in close proximity to Sydney. So I think there's a huge draw card for our local area here anyway, on the back of those reasons.
Boys, correct me if I'm wrong, but are we the sixth largest area in the country outside the capital city?
That's right. The Central Coast is these days. And I mean, bear in mind, you know, we're feeding employment-wise, population-wise between Newcastle and Sydney. But you touched on one of the most important points. It's only just started. We're going to see this unfold over the next decade, Matt. And that is a very big shift in society and sociology as far as employment goes. When a lot of companies have been forced to realise people can be just as productive. There's businesses that think, how much money can I save if I don't need to seat 200 people in the middle of Sydney, have a bit of floating desk, but enable 80% of the workforce to work remotely from home? All of a sudden, we become even more popular than ever for people that may not even consider Central Coast as an opportunity or a viable opportunity in which to call home.
Absolutely. And I mean, in the past, people have been willing to do the trade-off, right, for the lifestyle and the affordability up here. People have actually said, you know what, I will commute on the train 5 days a week. And that's been a big enough draw card as it is. And now that potentially don't need to go down to Sydney 5 days a week, there's just going to be a huge influx of people. And it's already begun. Like, I'm already seeing it.
All right, boys, I'm a numbers man. We've got stats all over this table. Hit me with something that's going to enlighten our listeners.
Well, look, one of the things that we're finding, Matt, one of the biggest stumbling blocks for purchasers, particularly those self-employed, with the huge growth in first-time buyers, the numbers are off the charts in the affordable coastal suburbs, is how long finance is taking for approval.
Yeah, mate, I'm experiencing that at the moment. I literally have 3 clients right now in the cooling off, and they've all been extended. and it was a minimum, it was an agreed 10-day cooling off, and yeah, the banks are just taking incredible time. There is some confusion there within the first home buyers. I'm learning new things every single day in terms of requirements and what the banks are willing to offer the first home buyers. But again, affordability price point up here around that sort of mid sixes, incredibly popular for the first home buyers.
What have you learned? If you're learning new things every day, what can you share with our listeners?
One thing that I would share for first home buyers is make sure that you are crystal clear on exactly what's required of you when you're submitting your loan documents, and make sure you're very clear from your broker exactly what your deposit's going to be, whether or not you're going to get LMI relief, also what your repayments are. Because I think a couple of my first home buyers, and I know friends have experienced this as well, you know, maybe they've watched, you know, the Today Show or mainstream media, and it's saying, you know, first home buyers only need a 5% deposit, go in and buy your home. They're out and about in the streets, you know, going to open homes and submitting offers prior to actually understanding exactly how they're positioned with their finances. And mate, it can be hugely, hugely costly and potentially catastrophic if you get it wrong and you don't have all your ducks aligned.
Sharpie, LMI. We can't assume all our listeners know what you're talking about.
Apologies. Lender's mortgage insurance. So basically that's an insurance, and Rob will probably be able to articulate this a little bit better than what I can, but basically it's an insurance put in place by the banks to cover the banks in case you forgo your loan or aren't able to make your loan repayments.
Look, and bear in mind, it also covers the mortgagee in that case as well too, in many cases. It gives relief to both parties. It gives surety. Steve, the other thing that's happening is we're saying the time taken, but particularly if you're self-employed, the hurdles as far as finance goes, how long have you been in business for yourself? But my buyers I'm dealing with, not first home buyers, but assured, confident buyers with a reasonable deposit, good self-employed work history, are still waiting 5 to 6 weeks for finance documents to be passed down. Most of the banks are deferring on self-employed people. There's one major institution that seems to be getting the balance of it because they have opened it up. But when we're looking at the number of people that are refinancing, Matt, we're all being told every time you turn on the morning television or the evening news is go out and get a better rate because it's there for you. You're probably paying too much. So people are going forward refinancing. That's putting demand on it. But when we look over it right now, the pre-approvals compared to 12 months ago has virtually tripled. Pre-approvals, that is people waiting to get the paperwork drawn down in order to move forward on a mortgage. So be aware, as Matt was saying, get all your research done. Make sure you got that covered off, checked and certified.
Unlike Rod, like Rod's working in his own backyard in beautiful Terrigal and Wamberal and north of Avoca, Erina. But you're buying all around Australia. Tell us more.
Yeah, correct. Predominantly, I help people like that are looking for their owner-occupier place here in our own backyard. Also, some investors. If investors are only comfortable to invest only on the Central Coast, I set out to find them the best investment for their strategy or for their requirements. But look, I recently finished an accreditation with PIPA, which are the Property Investment Professionals of Australia. They have an accreditation for people that are advising on property, and they recommend that anyone that is advising on property finish a course to become a qualified property investment advisor. I'm proud to say that I've completed that course. A few of my mentors sit on the board at PIPA, and I'm really, really proud to be a member, and not only that, uphold the high standards that they require. So part of that is whenever someone comes to me and says, Matt, we're looking to invest, it's part of my obligation to inform them that, you know, there are markets outside of the Central Coast that if you are comfortable with, we should consider. And then on the back of that, I share my research and I share my reasons for why I think that that particular area will be suitable investment for them.
Are there a couple of hotspots?
There are always some spots of interest. I try and stick away from the hotspots because, look, I'm a long-term investor, right? I always recommend with my clients to have a minimum of a 10-year view on their investment. So I'm looking for spots that are going to perform for the long term, okay? Look, yes, I am looking for warm spots, and I look for, you know, tightening down on houses, low vacancy rates, you know, infrastructure. All of these things obviously contribute to then create a hotspot, if you like. But yeah, certainly I'm making sure that my clients are investing in well-diversified areas, well-diversified economies, and hopefully they're going to perform for the long term for them.
Speaking of vacancy rates, Rod, you got some numbers. Record lows, is that correct, where we live on the Central Coast?
As far as vacancies, rental property vacancies, there is virtually no stock available. If you want to put it in the real terms, when it gets down to anything under 2%, you virtually say there's stock not available. Our office right now, Matt, we do not have one vacant or one foreseeably vacant rental property. Central Coast is down to 1.2%. Now, the incredible trend with this is, as we started 2020, we were up around 2.8%. That's not bad, but it's about an average. And right now, despite the forecast, the economic doom and gloom that was transposed to the Central Coast with COVID, we've seen record shortage of property, and that's right across the Central Coast. But from what I understand, you're seeing different things in Sydney.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just isolated to here, to this office, to Terrigal. I invest, you know, for my clients all over the Central Coast, and the feedback I'm receiving from property managers is the exact same thing. Very, very scarce and extremely tightly held in the rental space, which is good news for investors. Right, because low vacancy means that you get better tenants and obviously you can demand a premium for your rental. But yeah, I was doing some comparables the other day, and the eastern suburbs of Sydney has done quite the opposite. It's actually skyrocketed. I think going into the pandemic, they were sitting around 2.5, maybe 3% vacancy rates. Now they're around 6%. Now the Central Coast has done the exact opposite.
Look, it's easy to understand that really when you look at the demographics, because those that we've seen lose jobs and suffer inevitably in the hospitality and tourism industry. We look at younger people, the people that are most likely to be tenants in the current market, particularly eastern suburbs. Just imagine the percentage of those people that used to work for airlines, used to work in the hospitality, behind counters, restaurants, the tourism industry as well. That is the hotspot, and you're going to see very similar numbers up in areas like Byron Bay, for instance, and I'd imagine the Gold Coast we're seeing in the eastern suburbs. Central Coast, thankfully, our population's been somewhat more insulated than what we're seeing. Those younger people renting aren't as likely to have as high percentage of people involved in the jobs that are suffering due to COVID-19 restrictions.
Now, boys, one of the things we're going to do on this show is we're going to select suburbs around the country, suburbs we all know and love. But this episode, Matt, we're going to take a look at a suburb, an area in South Australia that you're actually investing in at the moment. Can you tell us some of the reasons why you've gone into this area?
Yeah, absolutely. So an area of interest for me and one that I'm actively buying in at the moment for clients is southwest of Adelaide CBD. It's called Hallett Cove. Some of the reasons why I really like this area is proximity to Adelaide CBD. So we're talking maybe a 30-minute drive, so close enough but not too far away. It's right on the coastline down there, so obviously you have your lifestyle drivers of being nice and close to the water. Not too far from really popular suburbs like Glen and Brighton, but more importantly, the infrastructure that's being built there and the money that's being spent there from both private companies and also government. You know, you have around $1.2 billion on the Tonsley redevelopment, $120 million in the Flinders Uni precinct, $880 million for transport infrastructure. So you match that stuff with lifestyle, affordability, low vacancy rates, and basically, you know, neutral cash flow yields or holding costs. For me, that's what stacks up for a good investment.
Here's the key question. Did you go down and inspect the property? Have you been to that part of South Australia before?
No, it's a good question. I own property down there as well that I actually haven't seen. But thankfully, I have colleagues, you know, obviously being in the industry, I have colleagues down there that do all the on-the-ground stuff for me. But certainly, whenever we buy down there, we do all of our due diligence. Not only do we have colleagues or representatives invest the property, but certainly we do pest and build and everything that's required there to make sure that, you know, we're not buying a lemon, so to speak.
So with it, I mean, Hallett Cove sounds like it'd be a good site for a new TV series, you know, Sea Change or something. And Hallett Cove has just got that ring about it.
Funny you say Sea Change, because you said that's what's happening here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there are a lot of people looking for a sea change here, and I have a few colleagues that work up in the Hunter Valley and even out in regional New South Wales, and they're calling it a tree change out there.
Now, with Hallett Cove, is the properties you're looking at, is this a growth area for new housing, or there's established homes that you're able to purchase, but because of desirability, you're getting a good return?
Rod, really, really good observation. And yeah, really, really good question. And this is unfortunately something that a lot of, you know, investors get wrong. These are all established homes. I don't purchase anything off the plan or any new investments. Ultimately, with property, you basically have two components, right? You basically have your land component and your property or your dwelling component. And the majority of the value is in your land content, right? So it's very, very important to make sure that you get the best parcel of land that your budget will allow, I guess. And steering away from oversupplied developments is crucial. If you want to look for that capital growth going forward.
Boys, we're starting to get the wind up from our producer. So any final words on our first episode, the inaugural Our House program?
Look, one thing I'd have to say, if anybody is considering going to market, we are still in a prime time. None of us, Matt, know what the next few months might bring. September, October, it could be a very different story based on forecasting. But right now, the Central Coast come out of it particularly well, and I think we're going to be looking very strong for the next month or two.
Final words, Matt, from Sharp Property Buyers?
Yeah, I'll just say that, you know, despite all the noise out there in the mainstream media, if you're in a position where lucky enough or you're fortunate enough to have regular income, you have cash buffers in place, and you're thinking about buying, I think now is an incredible time to be buying. I'm seeing a lot of astute buyers now getting all of their finances together and looking to capitalise on this unique time.
So that's our maiden voyage, episode one of Our House. Hope you enjoyed it. Just a quick disclaimer, the information on this podcast is general in nature. And of course, you should consider if the information is appropriate to your needs and seek professional advice when possible. By the way, we'd love you to follow us on socials and subscribe as well. Next week, we put the spotlight on my old hometown, Palm Beach, on the Gold Coast. And we're off to beautiful Fremantle in WA. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.